Guys, the little flag is up on our mailbox outside. I think it's time for us to do one of those episodes where we answer people's questions, despite the fact that, we're knowledgeable people with personable personalities, but I don't know what authority we have. I mean, Joanna podcasts a lot.
We
Is
all
this going to
podcast a lot.
involve is this going to involve walking to the mailbox? I'm not a big fan of walking.
Also, do you think that there are some youngsters listening to this who are like, what are you talking about, a flag on a mailbox? Do children even get mail anymore, is my question.
I mean, in my mind, the teenagers are still hitting them with baseball bats leaning out the windows of cars. So
Does anybody
probably.
even get that joke anymore? Might as well be telling it from a phone booth.
Might as well page me with this joke.
Well, luckily we'll be a little bit more topical on this week's summer mailbag episode of Storm Spoilers. So on the 12th of May, are there good marquees with King Arthur lowriders snatched and dead awake? So like King Arthur snatched lowriders dead awake?
Dead awake.
Or dead awake King Arthur snatched lowriders.
Yeah.
Lowriders snatched King Arthur.
Really, you can't lose
but
just walking
also
by some marquees.
Look at the other movies that are coming out that week that you could end up on a marquee. Absolutely anything. Whiskey Galore, The Wall, Paris Can Wait.
King Arthur snatched absolutely anything.
Dead awake.
Trump's America.
King Arthur snatched the wedding plan.
Hashtag
Trump.
Mostly
come out
as right. Hello and welcome to the Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite summer blockbuster of all time is Jurassic Park.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and my favorite summer blockbuster of all time has got to be Jurassic Park.
And I'm Neil Miller, and my favorite summer blockbuster of all time is Jurassic Park. We did
Hey!
it!
Da-na-na-na-na-na. I don't know why it plays the I Love Lucy theme, but that's what came to my
Shouldn't
head.
you be like
I mean, that would have been much more appropriate, but in my mind, it was like a Pee Wee Herman word of the day, and then the I
And
Love
then
Lucy theme started playing.
we all dance and the couch cushions move, and then the I Love Lucy theme plays.
Yep, that's the first of many peeks into my mind this episode, guys. It's going to
Nice.
be a crazy ride. Because this week we've solicited questions from you, the listener, about summer media and pop culture, and we will be answering them. And that is pretty straightforward, but some good questions. I had to do a little bit of research into some Marvel ones because of difficulties that I'm having with the Marvel business practices right now. But that's all things we'll get into after we check in on some reviews from Joanna Robinson.
Guys, I forgot to be ready. Hold on.
Oh, I have something
Oh.
that'll stall, something that
Oh,
we
yeah,
should
let's
talk
do
about
it.
in the intro, that I noticed today on Twitter, since we are part of the Joannaverse. Just want a little shout out, a congratulations to Dave Chen, Joanna's other podcast host, got engaged this week.
Yeah.
It's very
Oh.
nice.
He got engaged on Sunday. I wasn't allowed to tell anyone. In fact, I knew before. Anyway, yes.
What? You had insider? You had the scoop?
I did.
How
And
did that not show up in Vanity Fair?
I
Famous
kept
podcaster Dave Chen.
my gossip instincts under wraps, but I want to say, here's a fun fact about Dave Chen's lovely fiancée, Ellen. She is a Cast of Kings listener, and that's how Dave Chen met his fiancée, Ellen. So,
There's hope for us yet. I mean,
my
me.
Game of Thrones podcast
Yeah.
landed Dave Chen a wife. That's how I choose to view it.
And speaking of which, we will be appearing where I will be at Con of Thrones, where I will
Looking
be
for it.
searching out my soulmate, and we're going to be testing this theory about Joanna's good being the good luck Chuck of podcasts or something.
All right. This is our review. Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready for it.
It's one star. The reviewer is DC in Indianapolis. The subject line is, Joanna can't stop saying and. I try to tune into podcasts for the Game of Thrones spoilers and updates every week, but every single week I find myself screaming at my iPhone when Joanna is talking because she incessantly says nonstop. The only positive to her being on the show right now is creating a new drinking game where if you took just a sip of beer every time she says the words and you will have drank an entire case of beer within the first 20 minutes of each show. I love the content and the guys rock. The Rick and Morty episode, along with any other Joanna is not in, are by far the best. It's not even that her opinions annoy me because I tune into podcasts to specifically get other perspectives and opinions, but listening to her talk is like getting your teeth pulled out one slow, agonizing at a time. I get that her ties to Vanity Fair allow for some good scoop, but it's not worth the pain of having to listen to her struggle and stumble through every episode like it's her first time ever speaking publicly. Joanna, either collect your thoughts before you start speaking or don't speak, but making us suffer through while your brain searches for the right word constantly while you annoyingly insert elongated ums and uhs, every other word is like nails on a chalkboard. Dump Joanna off the show or teach her how to speak. We are rapidly approaching a point where the spoilers aren't worth the agony of listening to Joanna.
I have two thoughts about this review.
Okay.
Two thoughts. One, I know what DC stands for from DC in Indianapolis. It's douche canoe, which I believe is a pre-existing condition. So good luck with that. Two, I tried his drinking game today while listening to the American Gods thing, which, first of all, awesome. Loved it. I didn't get drunk at all. So this guy's facts. He's fake news. Fake news is what I'm saying.
So I just don't think we should have read it because it wasn't 5 stars. And I've been very clear.
He also, didn't follow the rules. Thanks, douche canoe.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe respond thoughtfully if it was under 5 stars, but I don't feel like I owe that person anything.
Yep.
Nor do I think he's listening anymore, so adios!
But thank you to all of the... we'll probably eventually read them, but thank you to, like, the 7 people that posted, almost immediately posted positive reviews this week that, like, pushed it way down the page. It was great. So, you guys are awesome. Not
everything worked out. We got some reviews. The world is in balance. Joanna can talk however she wants.
Right.
Wait, can we have Neil read this other review?
Which one? The request in the Joanna voice?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can do a Joanna voice, though.
But you should probably try.
I don't, especially after you read that, the one just now, I don't know if I can do it without being mean and just,
ums and uhs in there. That's what you should do. I think that it would be perfect.
Oh man, I'm so bad at impressions. Let me read this though. I'll read it in a, I was looking for a thing that says, please have Neil, there it is. Please have Neil read this in a Joanna voice. I don't know what that means. Anyway.
A lot of ums and uhs, apparently.
I could do it in a Joanna reading it in a Irish voice. Love the podcast and all 3 hosts. I came for the Game of Thrones spoilers, but stay for all the interesting deep dives on properties I like, plus those I'd never heard of before. The podcast even got me to read American Gods back in 2016, just so I'd be prepared when the eventual podcast episode came around 8 months later. Would love to hear more Thought Bubble / Republic City Dispatch crossover episodes. P.S. Seconding the love of production spoilers and the recommendation of Train to Busan.
That's the funniest thing I've
ever heard. I had to mute my audio intake. That was so excellent.
That review came from Polypal. That's way better than Douche Canoe from Indianapolis.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Next segment. Let's moving on.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that he, Red American Gods, because we alluded to it, but we didn't actually plug it. This is the second episode in your feed this week because Joanna and her amazing friend Gail Folsom have decided to come together and do a weekly recap of the show for you from two people who actually genuinely love both the book and are giving the show
so not
its
Dave.
Full chance.
The
people you want to hear talk about American Gods, not just the people who have opinions about American Gods.
As someone who's listened to the first episode, because it's online now, you can go find it. I'm not like, this isn't like a spoiler. But I do remember that we get a lot of reviews from people over the years that like Joanna's laugh. But if you like Joanna's laugh, you're getting double in these episodes because you get the Joanna laugh and the Gale giggle. It's amazing. I was delighted for an hour today listening to it.
That's They're like melodic, punctuated ums and ahs for your ears.
It's very rhythmic.
I was about to say, if you don't like Joanna, don't listen to that podcast. Because Gale, who is my longtime best friend, we're kind of quite similar.
Two peas in a pod.
There will be ums and ahs. There will be unnecessarily fancy, snobby words that just really don't need to be there. And some giggles. So there you go.
Also, I feel offended by the ums and ahs thing because, like, I love Jeff Goldblum. And Jeff Goldblum sort of made a career doing ums and ahs.
Life so... finds a way.
And he was in Jurassic Park, which is our best summer movie of all time. So take a walk is all I'm saying.
All right.
That's true.
All right. We did it.
Segment one, take a walk. Well, guys, we've submitted some of your questions. We've taken the questions that you've submitted and broken them in.
We did something with the questions.
Yeah, we broke them into two categories. Neil, would you like to take volume one? Movies and comics, and kind of pose these questions.
Yes, I have assembled questions in order of whatever. the first segment is movies and comics, and then the second segment, which I imagine will be a little bit longer, is all about TV because, you know, TV is like a thing for us. But the first, we'll get the first big question out of the way. It comes from @ahumanbymistake on Twitter, longtime follower, longtime listener, first time getting a question through, I think. They ask predictions for the top box office and what would be the biggest box office disaster and any possible sleeper hit. So we have three categories there. What is going to be the top box office winner of the year, of the summer? We're sticking to summer. What's going to be the biggest disaster and what's your pick for sleeper hit? Let's start with Joanna.
Well, if now counts, if May counts.
Right. May. So we're defining summer as May to the end of August.
I think it's got to be this Friday's Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. Because the first one made a boatload of money, and this one already has the built-in loyalty that the first one didn't even have going for it, you know? So I think this one is going to make even more money. I didn't like it as much as the first one, but I think it's going to make even more money than the first one did. Am I answering all three or just the box office one first?
We'll do them one at a time. So okay. We'll do biggest box. So Dave, what's your biggest... Your box office winner.
Oh man, I hope it's Spider-Man. There used to be a time about 15 years ago, I remember today.
Exactly, 15
that
years
Spider-Man
ago.
Was able to have the biggest, you know, summer box office, and I'm hoping that, you know, with a return to people who seem to really care about doing Spider-Man right, that we that he could pull it out.
Also, Robert Downey Jr. is in this movie.
That's true.
Yeah, I heard Iron Man's in that movie. Did you guys hear
that?
It's
crazy. Never would have known based on the trailer.
I mean, they're like keeping it pretty much under wraps, but I heard a rumor that Iron Man is in the new Spider-Man movie. So
those are both good picks. Up until recently, I would have said Wonder Woman because it is it's a good moment to be releasing like a big tentpole, female-led, awesome action movie. But Warner Brothers does not seem to remember that it's coming out, or they're waiting for Guardians of the Galaxy to get out of the way before they start their marketing cycle. So that's not
it's
great.
It's really been weird because you feel like they'd be able to keep going through Guardians of the Galaxy because it's such a vastly different thing,
right?
Both in like look and subject matter.
But I mean, here's we're sideways talking about this the news. The stories that are going around about how Wonder Woman is not being promoted to the level that Suicide Squad, Batman v Superman, the other DC movies that have, or DC Warner Brothers movies that came out, and, you know, some author, you know, some writers who I respect, like Donald Dickens over at UpRocks, are wondering if there is some sexism at play here, that this is a female-led movie and it's not getting the same treatment that these other movies got. I have to say that, you know, I'm going to take, I think, a very typically Dave Gonzalez stance on this and say, I think Warner Brothers is more greedy than they are sexist, if they are sexist. So whatever plan they have in place, I really feel like it's whatever plan they think will deliver the most seats, butts and seats.
Right. They didn't spend all that money on this movie to like try and lampoon it at the last minute.
Bury it. Yeah. So like it's possible. Let's say there's a world where Wonder Woman actually isn't that good. It's possible, right? We don't know. We haven't seen it.
Oh, it's very possible.
So if Wonder Woman is not good, maybe less advertising will be better for it in the long run. You know, we don't know. Certainly bad advance word of mouth did not hurt the bottom line for Suicide Squad or Batman v Superman. But I wonder if Warner Brothers is learning some lessons from that deluge that they had last year and sort of taking a more restrained approach. I really don't think it's sexism. They might be sexist, but really they are greedier than they are sexist.
Yeah, and so, I don't know if I buy the idea that like maybe Warner Brothers knows that it's not good, because their barometer for whether or not their own movies are good does not seem to be calibrated correctly, because they promoted the hell out of those other two movies and they were bad.
It seems more likely that they don't know if it's good or not to the degree that they've just sort of went for the absolutely don't lose money on any spillover. Like, but there seems to be great care going into what is coming out. They put out an amazing poster today. The TV spots have been, you know, cutting around anything that looks like Batman v Superman in a really interesting way. So it's not that the movie has no marketing team. It's just hopefully they're being targeted with it, I guess. Or, yeah, waiting for something to clear out of the way.
I interrupted you.
What's your answer?
I think I kind of have to. So I would have gone with Wonder Woman because there's really not a ton of other stuff coming out around Wonder Woman. Like, especially once you get past. Last year it was Finding Dory. And this year Pixar has Cars 3, which I don't know if that's going to do. It'll do well. It'll be like top five, but it's not going to win. I honestly think it's going to be Spider-Man, mostly because the only other major movies coming out in July are War for the Planet of the Apes and Dunkirk and Atomic Blonde. Those are like more adult. Like Spider-Man will be the movie that a bunch of families go see. So I think Spider-Man's probably the winner, but don't be surprised if it's like something weird like The Mummy, because it's like Tom Cruise or whatever.
All right. So it's two for Spider-Man. I mean, I think we should write these down and remember them and come back and have a reckoning. So it's two for Spider-Man, one for the Guardians.
Right. Which is also a very good pick because May is also kind of a light month.
So we shall see.
Tough one.
Happens.
Okay. So the next category is biggest box office disaster or bust or flop or whatever. And I feel like there's two answers that could be right. My pick would be Baywatch. And that's a riskier pick, mostly because it's R-rated, but it's The Rock,
terrible.
So it's tough. So for me, it was between Baywatch and King Arthur. And I really feel like Baywatch might fail. Like, there's just nothing. I don't know. I mean, I love The Rock, and I love the Efron, and I love women in swimsuits running in slow motion. There's nothing wrong with that. But I don't know. It's just, I feel like Baywatch is the movie that could surprisingly be not good and not
do
well. I
feel like what you described are things that I like, you know, in clips or magazines. What's disturbing about
things that I liked
Baywatch
in the 90s.
Yeah, what's disturbing about Baywatch is like the trailers make the plot and the characters look like almost unbearably stupid. And I'm not sure if they're going to be able to hit like the comedic tone to make that tolerable.
But then again, like Central Intelligence did really well.
Yeah, so who knows?
Maybe this is the Zoolander of now, but Zoolander was not rated R. The rated R comedy thing, it seems to be leading into Neighbors or something similar, but I don't think that this is going to get the Neighbors audience. I hate the ad campaign for this, despite liking some, I even like Zac Efron, you know, like, but Oh man, I hate so much about this Baywatch situation. And I watched Baywatch as a teen. Like I mean,
who didn't?
I guess, but like, you know, I don't know that most like, I don't know, shrill, strident feminists, as I consider myself to be, would be like, yeah, I watched the shit out of Baywatch, but I did. And I can sing you the theme song, but I won't, but I could.
Okay. So what's your pick for box office bust?
Not that
summer?
You asked for it. Okay, fine.
I mean, if you're not going to sing the theme song, then you need to give us your pick.
Fair enough. My pick is going to be, it's going to be The Dark Tower, actually, based on the shitty reaction that people gave the trailer today. I didn't think the trailer was that bad, honestly. But
even Eric Vespi from Ain't It Cool News, who's like the biggest Dark Tower fan of all time ever, didn't like that trailer.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is like, I think it's going to be like Ghost in the Shell, where the people who are the dialed in fans of this property are like, what the hell is this? Because it does not look like the Dark Tower that they recognize. So you have this built in fan base of Stephen King Dark Tower fans, but every Dark Tower acolyte that I know who watched the trailer is like, this is garbage town. It does not look like what I want to see. To me, I mean, they said from the start that they were not really, they were not at all faithfully adapting the books, that they were doing a sequel of sorts. And so they warned everyone from the start, but it's okay. People don't listen. And so the trailer just did not go over well. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's fair. Dave, what do you think? What's your box office?
The Hitman's Bodyguard down in August is going to prove that if you put Ryan Reynolds with a person acting crazy and have them do mild car and action stunts, you still do not get a movie unless he's in a Deadpool mask.
Although, I mean, I guess the question is like, what are the expectations for this movie? Like, how much could they possibly have spent on that movie? Like, it reminds me of Safe House, which was a Ryan Reynolds, Denzel Washington. So it was Ryan Reynolds and an older, more notable black actor. But Safe House was a movie they made for $85 million, and it made $200 million worldwide back in 2012. So my question on this would be expectations. I think that this could probably not do as well as we'd think, but still they'd be fine with it. Like, it's a Lionsgate.
I've been in two public theaters when this preview has shown, and one time there was like a couple people about like my parents' age that were laughing, and the other time absolutely no response, and then like one sigh when it had like ended in between previews, and I was like, oh shit. So I'm kind of going from like an experiential, I've felt the crowd, and the crowd does not like the Hitman's Bodyguard.
Well, that's fair. That's anecdotal evidence.
Everyone that I know who has seen it has seen the trailer, liked the trailer. So,
oh man, well, we're gonna see people, different strokes.
So it's not gonna do well in Colorado, but it will do well in wine country.
Yeah, perhaps. Okay, so for box office disaster, we have Baywatch, The Dark Tower, and Hitman's Bodyguard. So we will see who's right about that.
I'm surprised no one picked Pirates of the Caribbean.
Like, can you even believe that there's a Pirates of the Caribbean movie coming out?
I've heard it's not bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, I heard that too, but like, still, I mean,
it seems weird because I remember going to the first one being like, now they're just adapting fucking rides. This
I know.
Isn't gonna work.
And then
I walked out being like, oh man,
yeah.
But now look how far we've come.
That's
but
one of my most delighted surprise summer blockbusters is I went with like, I was in college. I was with like two of my college friends who were there for a summer session. It was hot as blazes out in Davis, California, bone meltingly hot. We were like, we don't want to see this movie, but we do want the movie theater's air conditioning. We went in and we were like, this is the best movie we've ever seen. Cause our expectations were in the basement. So that might be, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, : Dead Men Tell No Tales, : The Return of Orlando Bloom, : also Keira Knightley.
This movie stars a weird CGI facsimile of Javier Bardem.
Might actually be good if we expect it to be terrible. So who knows?
Yeah, well, who knows? Okay, last thing, sleeper hit, which could mean a whole lot of things, but under this context, I think we should make it mean a smaller release
I'm ready.
That will surprise people. So I'm ready. Dave.
Oh, well, no, yeah. go to Joanna.
Oh no, ready. Joanna, you're the ready one.
I just don't want anyone else to steal my pick.
I mean, that's fair. It's probably a movie that we've already seen, all three of us, right?
Oh, it's not actually. It is The Big Sick.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, I saw The Big Sick.
Well, okay. So Neil has seen it. Dave and Joanna have not. Starring Kumail Nanjiani and Zoe Kazan and Holly Hunter and Ray Romano, tearing up the box office. Actually, Ray Romano has torn up the box office via IC.
Ray Romano is so good in that movie.
Yeah. So this is based on the real life story courtship of Kumail Nanjiani and his real life wife, Emily Gordon. It's directed by Michael Showalter. It is produced by Judd Apatow. So to me, it feels like a potential for like a train wreck, Bridesmaid sort of. We didn't see this comedy coming, but Judd Apatow has shown that he often has a good nose for, you know, developing comedic talent. I mean, I think we three are all fans of Kumail Nanjiani's work, being podcast listeners that we are, Silicon Valley fans, but, you know, he's definitely not broken wide, but this is, I think this has real potential. So I'm excited.
That's a good pick. Dave, what you got?
That's a really good pick. That was probably going to be my pick, so I'll have to stray out. And although I'm tempted to pick one of our South by Southwest live discussion topics, I think I'm actually going to guess. Oh, man. No, I think it's going to end up being Baby Driver.
I mean, yeah, and, you know, Baby Driver is kind of, it's a wide release. And the marketing has already started Wonder Woman.
And they pulled it up. It's also Sony, but they pulled it up to counter program against themselves with Spider-Man.
What so it's a whole time like, doing
everybody into the theater. And I'm thinking that it's not going to be huge, but I think that Baby Driver could end up having legs. It's like that thing you watch in July when Spider-Man sold out.
Yeah, so it's got Baby Driver comes out June 28th, which is a Wednesday, in fact. And Spider-Man comes out July 7th. So Baby Driver at least has a week to breathe before Spider-Man comes along. Yeah, Baby Driver. I'm really excited to see that again.
Super.
When I'm not sleep deprived.
I'm looking forward to maybe seeing it sober. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens.
Okay, I'm going to pick one movie that I've seen. I saw it at Sundance, and it's going up against The Dark Tower. So it's got a good chance, and it also ties into the fact that Legion just ended and Aubrey Plaza was amazing in Legion. It's Ingrid Goes West, which is a very small comedy. It's also sort of a movie that I'm rooting for because its distributor is Neon, which is the new distribution company from Tim League, the owner of The Draft House. I don't want to say good friend of mine, but like, we're buddies, okay? Tim's a good dude. So I'm kind of rooting for it. Also, I saw it, and it's really weird and wild, and it has Elizabeth Olsen in it. And so I think that that's one of those kind of end of the summer, everybody's tired of blockbusters, The Dark Tower, if it's not as good as people want it to be, this would be really good counter-programming around that time. So hopefully.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what Neil's talking about, go to YouTube and watch the trailer. Right
oh
now.
God, the trailer's
it's
so good,
intriguing.
Yeah, and the movie is just as weird. So there you go. Okay, so those are our sleeper picks are Ingrid Goes West, Baby Driver,
and The Big Sick. How good lucky ones. We are to be alive right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of good counter programming this summer, and since having gone to Sundance and South by, I've seen almost all of it, and I can tell you, it's all pretty good. Okay, so moving on, we've now talked about movies that are going to succeed, movies that are likely to fail, and movies that we hope you go see, even though they're not going to be huge releases. But this question from @theflow82 is a very important one. If you were only allowed to see one movie this summer, what would it be? And this time I am going to start with Dave.
Spider-Man Homecoming.
I mean, that's a no-duh statement.
Seems like an obvious one.
That's the least surprising answer I've ever heard in my life.
Shocked.
I think Joanna's is probably going to be different, though.
It is.
Yes, lay it on us.
But what is it?
I'll give you a hint. It's coming out soon. At least based on what you told us before we started recording.
I don't remember what I said.
Wasn't it this week's big release?
I've already seen that.
Oh.
That
well,
was
no,
my...
this is if you had to only see one. Mm,
but
it doesn't matter if you've already seen it.
Having seen it, I'm taking it off the list.
Oh, your grass is always greener on the thing I haven't seen.
You know what? I'll put all my chips on a gamble, and that's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, which Luc Besson's space epic that could be the next Fifth Element or could be the next... A bad movie that Luc Besson has made. I saw a lot of footage and like concept art at Comic-Con, and it actually all looked really amazing to me. Even Cara Delevingne, who is a supermodel, but occasionally an actress and hasn't impressed me that much in anything else. She's not terrible. She doesn't impress me in anything else, but I thought she was really lovely in this. Rihanna and some other people, including that guy who's like kind of creepy, but you know who I mean? I've started sounding like
Dane DeHaan.
I've started sounding like what your grandparents sound like when they're trying to describe someone. You know, that guy is kind of creepy, but you know what
with
I mean.
The face.
He was the goblin boy in that spider movie.
I read about him in a chronicle somewhere. Anyway, right. Dane DeHaan. So, yes.
He's the one who made love to Harry Potter in that other movie.
Oh my god.
Wow, that's
that was
a,
good. That was
that's
good.
A pretty cultured grandfather
yeah.
though.
Yeah, I like it.
I think it's right down the pipeline as someone that would be related to us.
Yeah, it's also pretty true. Okay, Neo. So you, Spider-Man and Valerian. Mine, I've struggled to come up with one that isn't the Nut Job 2 Nutty by Nature because as we discovered off the air, I'm the only one of us who even knew that the Nut Job 1 was a thing, let alone saw it.
Dave knew about it.
I did not see it. I did not see the Nut Job.
Dave thought it was a movie with Bruce Willis voicing.
I did think... Well,
it is not.
Is it Brendan Fraser doing his Bruce Willis voice?
No, it's
maybe I got confused that way.
It's Will Arnett doing a sort of Bruce Willis voice.
All right. I still don't believe that the Nut Job original flavor is a real movie.
I think that's fair.
Made up the Nut Job. I'm just saying.
We may currently be fake newsing you real hard.
I also want to know like what I was doing in 2014 where I missed
the existence of the Nut Job.
Yeah.
The $100 million grossing animated powerhouse.
But anyway, the Nut Job 2 Nutty by Nature is not your answer.
That's not my pick, although very tough. I'm going because you know, okay, so you guys are right. But here's what I think. If you've seen one Spider-Man movie, you've seen all of them, basically.
I can't believe you said that to Dave's face.
Oh, yeah, I did. And you know what? Luc Besson, great, but I've already seen The Fifth Element. Here's what I am going to see.
What?
I know. You guys didn't know that I was just going to shit all over your picks, did you?
Yeah, and you're going to pick like the Transformers movie.
Oh, God, no. I am picking...
I think Anthony Hopkins at Night Robots is a really intriguing place to go.
Doesn't the Transformer... Night Robots have Hitler in it.
What?
Okay, I'm gonna Google this while you're talking. Hold on.
Anyway, so I'm sticking with my theme of picking things that are going up against the Dark Tower, and I'm going with Detroit, the Catherine Bigelow movie starring our guy John Boyega, written by Mark Boal, who did The Hurt Locker. John Boyega and Will Poulter, who are both fantastic, and it's a super hyper relevant story for our time, and I love a good Catherine Bigelow movie, so I'm in for Detroit. It's coming out August 4th.
You got really high roaded us that pick there, Neil.
I know, I got real snooty.
I have to say I was really Detroit was on my list of when we did an episode of Gen Pop earlier this year where we picked like our top 10 movies we were most excited about for the year, and at the time it was called Untitled Catherine Bigelow Detroit Project.
They just shortened it.
They just snipped some words off of that to give you Detroit. So I was excited about it, and then I saw the trailer, and then I was less excited about it. So
I was the other way. I was not like super
less excited when John Boyega does an American accent and he's not in a Star Wars. So
oh wow.
Okay, I'm going to read.
That's a weird reason.
I'm going to read you. Well, then also, what's his name?
Will Poulter.
Yeah, Will Poulter's also doing a terrible American accent. So I don't get it. Okay, I'm going to read you a little snippet from this article from slashfilm.com called Transformers: The Last Night Adds Hitler and Many Dinobots to the Mix, because why not? What we're wondering is just what the significance is of Hitler in Transformers The Last Night and the mythology of aliens being from Cybertron. Like, that's a sentence I just read aloud. Perhaps whatever artifact is rumored to be at the center of this movie was once being pursued by Hitler. Or maybe it was in the hands of Hitler and there was a sect of Transformers who got it back from him in the 1940s. That would mean Transformers have been part of human history for longer than we initially thought. It would certainly be an interesting way to expand their mythology. This is where I remind all of our listeners that I've never seen a single Transformer movie.
What? So as far as
the trailer also has them with like the Knights of the Round Table.
Yeah.
So that goes back even further.
It's a major time traveling situation.
Here's what you need to know about the Transformers franchise. From someone who is a big Transformers fan from cartoon days, the first movie is okay to pretty good. The rest of them are just Michael Bay throwing in whatever comes to his mind during the pre-production process. Just, he probably was like watching the news one night and was like, oh, Nazis are coming back. Let's put Hitler in the movie.
Wow.
Yeah,
I will say that Transformers 3 in IMAX 3D.
Was that the Chicago one with the wingsuit guys?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one was pretty dope.
Yeah, it might be one of the most satisfying IMAX 3D experiences I've had. And that includes Avatar, which is probably still the top just because of where it landed on the cinema history.
There is a Transformer movie that has both Jack Rayner and TJ Miller in it, and I still haven't seen it. Those are two people I like so much, and I could not get over it.
But Mark Wahlberg's the lead. It's got that wall bump. It's a hard bump to get over.
I don't mind Mark Wahlberg. I don't know what to tell you about that.
You just really have to spend more time in a room with him.
As a human, he's probably terrible. But as like a star of a movie, like I even saw that one where he plays an English professor with a gambling problem.
I reached a point with my understanding with him as a human that I can't see that anymore.
The gambler. He was an English professor. It was
the
great.
Gambler just wants unlimited streaming from AT&T. Okay. Now that we've shit all over Mark Wahlberg and Transformers. Speaking of Nazi stuff, the final question in this segment is a comics question. It is the one that Dave had to do some research on. It comes via email from Rachel, and she actually asked a bunch of questions, which sort of overlap with some of our other questions in the next segment. But the final one was, also, what the hell is Marvel doing with Cap in the comics? Dave, please explain.
Yeah, Dave.
So, canonically, what happened is Hydra got their hands on a sentient cosmic cube named Kobik, who changed all of human history so that the Nazis won World War II, but another cosmic cube was used to alter our perception for a period of time. But the end result of what's been happening is this thing called Secret Empire, is that Captain America for about a year in the comics has been an agent of Hydra, and we've seen through flashback that this has been consistent through time. He's killed Bucky with the help of Baron Zemo, who's his, you know, new best friend. He's taking over the American government. He has been picking apart the Avengers by sort of playing both sides. He's caused an alien invasion. In the Free Comic Book Day book, he picks up Thor's hammer while still in this Hydra thing. Basically, the architect of this storyline, Nick Spencer, who writes the Captain America comics and is writing a lot of the Secret Empire spinoffs, has been trying to say that eventually when we get to the end of this, we're all going to understand what's happening. But it's been really an artful plot-wise that's been happening because they tried to split Hydra into like a Nazi-ish faction and a not-Nazi-ish faction. To explain how, you know, Captain America is not a Nazi. He's a Hydra agent. It's something completely different in this
land. Was it called Alt-Hydra?
It's just factions inside Hydra, and, like, Captain America kills the Red Skull.
We're not Nazis.
One of the factions.
We're the Alt-Hydra.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Something like that.
That's what I was going for.
No, I mean, I got it. It's just too close. It's too close.
Too real.
Anyways, but the problem is that the Hydra that Cap represents is still, like, white people harassing not white people, and so it's not translating so much. Marvel just this week released another statement instead of talking at cons and stuff, but an actual statement that's like, we think, you know, by the time you get to the end of this, you'll understand what we're doing, and Cap as a character is going to win out. That's what's happening. I haven't been reading Marvel Comics since Ike Perlmutter, their CEO, donated $1 million to what was then the Donald Trump campaign, and has since consistently advised him on Veterans Affairs in ways that I don't personally agree with. I've decided not to buy Marvel Comics, but that's what's going on. A lot of people are mad right now because they're focusing on doing this weird thing with Captain America, and meanwhile, other people who are editors or producers at Marvel Comics are making weird statements about maybe their minority heroes aren't doing as well, and then they have to walk that back. It's a mess. Marvel Comics publishing is a mess right now. And then the weird thing is they're asking you to stick around to see how this Cap thing turns out. But Secret Empire is an event that started with a zero issue and has tie-in issues. So sticking around to figure this out is going to end up costing you $21 to $30 a week. So if that's something you're in for, stick around to figure out if Captain America's forever an asshole. It's going to be your call sometime in the future.
Yeah, I feel like maybe they just picked a not great time to make Captain America, to do the edgy Captain America as a secret Nazi storyline.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been like also interesting timing if it would have been short and kept just in a Captain America book to like be a thing, but anchoring an entire event around it after, you know, Marvel comic readers are already kind of in event fatigue seems weird. But hey, apparently I don't know what comic readers want.
And this, kids, so, is the reason why expanded universes are tough.
For sure. I mean, it's been kind of nice because it's like, I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just happened to throw shade by accident at Marvel Comics by someone had asked Simmons if all Hydra were Nazis, and she said yes and never let anyone tell you otherwise. So, oops, Marvel Television kind of stepped on some coattails there.
Oh, man, that actually answers a question that I did not add to our spreadsheet, which is, why don't you guys ever give any love to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? There you go. There's some love for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I stopped.
Yeah, and
it,
because
like,
it's wildly inconsistent in quality. Yeah.
If you want to hear us, Dave and myself, love on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you can go back and listen to Thought Bubble when we used to watch it and talk about it. But we don't anymore. So
there you go.
Or I don't. Dave maybe does.
Yeah, check in.
All right, cool. So that's movies and comics. When we come back, we'll do TV stuff.
Apple Blossom.
I kind of just want to let you keep singing. That'd be fun.
Seems to be the problem. All right.
But we have to talk about TV because the people have sent us TV questions. So this is part volume two. We're going volume one, volume two, because we're cool too, like Guardians of the Galaxy.
We can be on cassette tapes. We're cool.
This is our remix. We also have Kurt Russell. No, that's not true. Anyway. So some TV-related questions. The first one comes to us from Carolyn on Twitter, at cpike623. Are you ever going to cover the rest of Legion? Translation, this is my translation. What did you think of the end of Legion? Did we talk about the end of Legion? I feel like...
I think we have an episode about the entire first season of Legion.
Yeah.
That we should tweet.
I feel like maybe we did. Now I regret putting this question in here.
I swear we talked about it.
Anyway, it's really good.
We did, because Dave and I talked about the end of credits sequence. Yeah, we talked about
it. Yeah.
Well, we had a whole thing where we had the episode, and then we had to wait until Legion.
Right. Yeah, we did.
We were, like, so super prompt with that, maybe Carolyn missed it if she was catching up on Legion.
Yeah.
Guys, like her DVR, surprise, this is a stealth segment of We Talked About This Before with Neil Miller. Slap dash in the middle of your Storm Spoilers.
Yeah, and in fairness, Carolyn, not only did she submit this question, because maybe she missed it, I was on that episode and I still couldn't remember. So I included this question in our questions. Anyway, moving on. The next one comes from Bradley at Bradley of Martin on the Twitter. This is a good one. Other than HBO Go, because obviously, to win summer TV viewing, should I have Hulu, Amazon Prime, Netflix, or just cable? I almost want this to be a you have to pick one question, which I think is really fascinating.
Well, it is because, you know, like as a pop culture writer professional, like I have all the things, but I forget sometimes that other people, you know, have budgets. And like, you know, it's not that I have a ton of money. It's just sort of like I need to have all the things for my job. And other people are like, no, this is a luxury. And I'm like, oh, yeah. So my answer to Bradley, even though you didn't say I could go first, but I'm going first, which if I had to pick right now, this very second, I would say Hulu, because I think The Handmaid's Tale is just really phenomenal. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But look, taking the longer view of the summer, and I hate to do this because they win everything, but I have to give it to Netflix because of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Master of None, The Defenders, Orange is the New Black, and then they've got like their weird movie things that they're doing, you know, so there's just too much on Netflix to ignore, even though I like resent them for dumping all this content on this. But
right. And you've got like House of Cards and all these like Dear White People, Sense8, if you're into Sense8, which I am. Master of None, Series 2. No? Nothing? Master of None?
Yeah, I already said Master of None. Yeah.
War Machine, the Brad Pitt movie.
The Brad Pitt movie, yeah.
Ooh, the new Tilda Swinton and...
I just don't know how to pronounce that.
Okja. Whatever that movie is. It's going to be great. Yeah. All the Adam Sandler movies.
Well, I think I gotta call a technicality here. He's talking about just summer TV, which is why.
Oh, that's true.
It is,
but you also get movies. Between,
but most of what Neil just said is just the summer TV.
Yes,
The Worst Witch, but, season one.
Oh,
what is that?
So we're not allowed to pick movies.
Well,
I mean, I'm just saying, like, why would you?
Stranger Things.
Obviously, if you're going to pick between those three services and include movies, you're going to want to do Netflix because they bought the most shit this year.
I don't know.
That's fine. We can leave movies. But even if you leave movies off of it, you've got way too much TV to ignore on Netflix. Stranger Things doesn't come back till like October, right?
That's true. Yeah, and I think Hulu, it's tough because The Handmaid's Tale is like the big one of the moment. But I don't know what else they have.
They had the Stephen King, James Franco one.
11/22/63, which they've got The Path, which I think is terrible. They've got Harlots, which I actually quite liked.
They have Casual and Difficult People, which are both good.
Yeah, they've got that. Didn't they have? They had a freaking House MD. Oh God, you guys. I don't know. I need to start taking Ginkgo Biloba or something like that. House MD had a show on there, so you know it's something.
Yeah, not great.
Hugh Laurie had a show on Hulu.
I mean, East Los High might be coming back, so like, you never know. Nope, that's a bad joke. Anyway,
Chance. Yeah. So this is the thing. About peak TV. Is like Hugh Laurie had a show called Chance. Hugh Laurie was one of the biggest stars on television ever. A show on Hulu called Chance that nobody watched. At all. There's this huge thing on AMC going right now, The Sun with Pierce Brosnan, which is an adaptation of a huge novel. No one cares. No one's watching. There's just too much TV all the time. Anyway,
that's a different question.
That's sort of the same question. You know.
But if you had to pick one, if you had to narrow it down,
yeah.
I'd say it has to be Netflix. So, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing to highlight here is I would not pick cable.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think with a stable of pay-as-you-go, like, iTunes subscriptions and streaming platforms, I would not pick cable in any of those things.
I would only say for the summer, I would say that that's a case, but the rest of the year, FX owns my heart, so, and FX is, like,
right.
it's hard, FX has an app, but it's hard to get FX shows.
Because then you're talking, right, you're talking FX, AMC, TNT, TBS, which both have some good shows, Comedy Central, so like Broad City.
So FX, AMC, Comedy Central, they're all Sling partners. So I still think you could bypass cable.
There you go.
At least when, you know, I've got my American Horror Story going and I have to watch it live because that's the fun of it.
You know what throws an interesting wrench into this question?
That's true. I sling American Horror Story as well.
The Hulu live TV package that they're going to release.
Yeah, but they've got weird partners. I mean, not weird partners, but they don't have like the best partners yet.
But if they added some of these networks.
Yeah, and they've got a deal with FX. Like they're the sole streamer of Atlanta, stuff like that, like, you know, and they did Legion like I think it was like 6 days later, 4 days later, or a week late, something like that. I think they're doing the same with Fargo, where they'll air the episode several days later. That doesn't work for me, but if you don't care about being right on top of it, then Hulu does have that partnership with FX. So there's
that is interesting. Well, and you're right, and also Sling. I mean, in addition to Sling, now there's other. Like PlayStation TV, there's the DirecTV.
Yeah, but Sling's based out of Colorado, so let's just pretend there's a Sling.
Oh, I see how it is.
Fair enough. My answer to this, I think honestly I have to go with Joanna's answer of Netflix. Like, you're just getting too much for the super cheap Netflix price. So...
But I mean, that's the Netflix model, and that's why John Landgraf of FX hates Netflix so much, is they throw everything at the wall. And so you have like Fuller House, which is Garbage Town, or Adam Sandler stuff, which is Garbage
Town.
Talk to me about it.
Don't you dare disparage Kimmy Gibbler.
And then they've actually got good stuff. If they just did good stuff, then, you know, they, anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's like, if they just did good stuff, they probably wouldn't have as many users, because there's plenty of people out there that like trash.
True enough.
Reality TV is a big deal.
True enough. All right.
Anyway.
Don't go and offend everyone who listens to our podcast who watches reality TV. I learned this lesson the hard way last week.
Reality TV is a perfectly viable thing to watch and make a living doing.
Yeah, man. No, last week I offended like all the true crime podcast listeners on Gen Pop. So don't. Poke the bear, man.
Oh, yeah. With Netflix, you also get a lot of those true crime shows that are good.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Don't they have, like, this nun murder show that's coming?
Anyway. Damn, another point for Netflix. Damn you, Netflix. And they released
Netflix
a trailer.
Netflix needs to just... Netflix is, like, trying to... It's like if I were to be drowned by chocolate. That's, like, how I feel with Netflix. I'm like, yes, no, yes.
It's like, oh, well, there's worse ways to go. Speaking of Netflix, real quick aside, what did you guys think of the trailer for The Defenders after we sort of eviscerated Iron Fist?
Well, that was why I checked out the rest of Netflix's summer offering, because I really did feel like Defenders was making me lean towards Netflix being the answer, just because that trailer was an absolute delight. They might have front-loaded all the Danny Rand jokes in that trailer, but I felt like they made, you know, they had a sense of self-awareness. Made Danny Rand kind of the butt of a couple jokes. Like, he gets the worst nickname, the kid with the glowing fist. Like, there's the Devil of Hell's Kitchen, the, like, what, righteous ex-con, the sassy detective,
yeah, it was
or
like
whatever.
Blind ninja.
No. He was the Devil of Hell's Kitchen, which is, like, his cool moniker. And then you've got the kid with the glowing fist.
Yeah.
Oh, Danny Rand.
We're not really sure what you do and your hand glows or whatever.
And I mean, I loved Elektra. I didn't think that Daredevil season 2 is that like amazing, but I loved Elektra in it. So Elektra's back, Sigourney Weaver's there. It's going to be a good time, guys.
I'm concerned that the only action scene we got to see was a hallway action scene. And I feel like we know they could do that. And if I could get my dream, we would have actually gotten a hero shot of them looking like they were ready to fight crime. I feel that might be important in the future, but hopefully we'll get that and it won't be like just in the last episode. But, you know, Sigourney Weaver looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Moving on to a couple of, these are little hot take segments. But the first one comes from, at Electric Miss O, thoughts on The Handmaid's Tale? Question.
It's so good. That's my thought.
Yeah, but okay, I didn't like the part where they're trying to pass that healthcare bill.
Oh, stop.
That's a real... That's reality, not The Handmaid's Tale.
Stop with your two realness.
I have not watched The Handmaid's Tale, so this one's on you guys.
It's just debuted its fourth episode. There is, I think it's the third episode, where there's a scene where there's a protest that looks very similar to a protest we might have seen on the Women's March Day or something similar, where the people in riot gear just open fire on all the protesters and kill them. And you're like, holy shit, man. Like, it really...
This is amazing.
No, it Big feels so close. It feels so close. It's so scary. Anyway, yeah. Handmaid's Tale is great. So the surprise of Handmaid's Tale is Alexis Bledel, who I never thought was a good actress, but is freaking great in The Handmaid's Tale. And also someone to look out for, who I wrote about out of TCA, is director Reed Morano, who...
Reed Morano is really awesome.
Yeah, she directed the first three episodes and was sort of responsible for establishing the look of the series, which is just, it's unlike anything else on TV, which is hard to do since there's so much TV right now. And it's gorgeous. And it's like painterly, while also feeling really realistic, because, you know, sort of some of the long shots and the weird way that people dress and the primary colors, like that's very painterly. But she was talking to TCA about how in some of the shots, she basically like strapped the camera right to the front of her actors. Like, because the handmaids are wearing these weird wide-winged bonnets, the camera gets like up under the bonnet and you get these dramatic close-ups of, the, you know, Elizabeth Moss's face or Alexis Bledel's face or Samira Wiley's face. And it's just sort of, it's startling. There's not a lot of Vaseline on the lens. Like, you see every line and pore in Alexis Bledel, who you think is still, the sirens are here because I'm talking about Handmaid's Tale, who you think is still like 16, but when the camera...
She's proven she can read.
When the camera's that close to her, she looks tired and fragile and all this other stuff. Anyway. Dave, have you seen? Yeah, she's awesome. Dave, have you seen any of The Handmaid's Tale?
I've seen the pilot. Mm-hmm. I plan to catch up. I read the book in my school days, and I have some process semi-spoilery questions for you, but we won't actually spoil people who haven't seen The Handmaid's Tale. Do you know how far in the story they're getting this first season, because they've been picked up for a second season?
They're taking some dramatic liberties already, past the pilot episode. They're fleshing out the season with a lot of flashback, which is actually some of the scarier stuff, is seeing like what the life was like before it was like this. The shorter answer is I don't know how far they're going. But I think, you know, I talked to the showrunner at TCA about it, and he was sort of saying that he sees a lot of like other stories in this universe potentially taking place.
When they say in this universe, they mean the same time period in this universe that the bulk of the text takes place in?
I don't know the answer to that. But what I will say is that unlike something like Big Little Lies or 13 Reasons Why, which are both threatening a second season, this is a show that I really could see having a second season. So I'm usually against the unnecessary second season, especially when you've covered the entirety of the book you've adapted, 13 Reasons Why. But, you know, this one is an exception, I think. So.
Wait, they're doing a second season of 13 Reasons Why?
They're talking. I mean, yeah, probably.
Does that even work? I mean... We were the ones that said there was no way that the OA was going to get a second season, so we're not the best judges on weird streaming pickups.
That is one of the things about streaming networks, Hulu, Netflix. They'll just keep making them. They have money forever. It's fine.
But the showrunner of The Handmaid's Tale, Bruce Miller, I had a really great couple really great conversations with him about it. He's been working in TV a long time. And he was very aware of, like, I know some people will be like, I don't really want the old white guy doing The Handmaid's Tale, which I think is one of the reasons why he brought Reed Morano on to sort of direct the first three episodes and really give her perspective on shaping the show. And I just think he's done an amazing job with it. So
Handmaid's. Kudos to that guy.
Yeah.
He's a real ally.
Mm-hmm. Sure is. He's woke as hell.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to another show that I don't watch. that's based great. On a book that's going to go beyond where the book was.
Yeah, that's currently in the Game of Thrones slot, essentially, for HBO, At Maroge. What are your thoughts on The Leftovers? Do you have thoughts?
Am I the only one watching all the TV?
I feel like The Leftovers, I watched like the first four episodes of season one and then quit. Do I have to go back and watch all of The Leftovers in order to just start watching what I'm told is an amazing season that stars Carrie Coon, who's also amazing on Fargo?
Well, but Carrie Coon has been amazing on Leftovers since the beginning, but season one is
She was on The Leftovers the first season? See, this is how I paid when I watched it the first time.
No, I mean, the reason I was first aware of who Carrie Coon was because I was trying to miserably slog my way through The Leftovers season one, and I was doing the Station Agents podcast at the time, and I would complain about The Leftovers every week. And then Dustin Rolls would go, but Carrie Coon, she's such a bright spot. And he was right. He's always right about these things. Season one, I think, is just awfully depressing. But season two, which I don't think you have to watch season one to appreciate season two is incredible. And then season three is also just incredible. But season two was just an amazing season of television. So I would say Neil Miller, go back and watch season two. Then you can watch season three. But you don't have to do season one.
I mean, I get the gist of season one.
Yeah, it's just that.
A bunch of people disappear and it's depressing.
It's just more misery. And then, and David Lindelof gave this great interview to Andrew Greenwald on the now defunct Ringer or Grantland podcast. But, about like how depressed he was when he did The Leftovers season one and how it was basically therapy for him and how season two, it might have been a Ringer podcast because I think the interview came during season two because Andy Greenwald hated season one of Leftovers and then was one of many of us who like came around to season two. So, Damon was like, hey, Andy, I'm glad you see what I'm trying to do here. And it's just brilliant TV and it's got a lot of like the Losty stuff that you really see in seasons two and three what it was that David Lindelof brought to Lost. And if you watch a Carlton Cuse joint, you see what Carlton Cuse brought to Lost. Like you can really see the way that particular, mixed cocktail has separated. And, Lindelof, despite the fact that Prometheus is garbage fire, is the cerebral, really cerebral half of that, the really sort of arty, weirdy, experimental half of that, and then Cuse is more of the
why are there bears there
again? Yeah, well, Cuse is more of the pulpy genre guy. It would be my assessment, and just The Leftovers, Carrie Coon, Justin Theroux, everyone's so great in it. So, Regina King last season, so good.
What, Regina King? I love Regina King.
Yeah, buddy, get with it.
I gotta go watch The Leftovers now.
And Ann Dowd, who's great on The Handmaid's Tale, is also really great on The Leftovers. So do it. Liv Tyler, terrifying. She is terrifying on The Leftovers. And you did not think Liv Tyler could do that. It's like Alexis Bledel on The Handmaid's Tale. You didn't think she had it in her, but she does.
Hmm. Nice.
So this is Joanna Talks About TV that no one else is watching.
Well, someone on Twitter did ask me because I'd alluded that somebody once told me how The Leftovers ended if I still thought, given the four episodes that have aired from this season, if it's still going to end that way in four episodes, and I have not seen anything that proved me wrong, so to be continued.
But you have not said publicly. Sorry.
I haven't said publicly because it's totally not my place, if it's right, to step into a series I don't understand and kick it over.
We should have you.
I don't know how.
Down and put it in a lockbox.
Yes.
We could do that. I mean, like the Jack Eyes thing, Jack's Eye box, supposedly.
Sure.
I didn't tell you guys.
No.
I feel like I told you guys.
You might have told Joanna. I don't know. I wouldn't have cared. I'll be honest.
Anyway, still TBD. Maybe I'll put it in a box. And,
or, yeah, maybe
know,
you just tell Joanna.
Let you guys make fun of me.
She'll keep it. She already wrote down our picks for box office. So.
All right.
Joanna's the keeper of the information. Okay, so there are some thoughts from one of us on The Handmaid's Tale and The Leftovers. Great, great job. It just goes to show which one of the three of us is the most serious professional TV watcher.
Well, Dave doesn't do this for a living, and your site is called Film School Rejects, not TV School Rejects. So
allegedly,
you know.
That's what it's called. It's taking a break right now. But yes, that's true. Okay, final question. This is a great one. This is probably also a great Joanna question, but it also comes with a mini review, which I'm going to read, not in an accent or anything. This is from Christopher in Spain. He says, I am a longtime fan of the podcast and wanted to thank you all for doing the off-season tour. I've been teaching abroad in Spain since September, and this podcast has kept me in the know regarding some of my favorite pop culture properties. I love that we can be like, there's like utility to it. Great. The off-season tour has also taught me about some new properties that I am excited to explore. Here comes the question. With all of the new shows on TV, how do you decide what to invest time into? I know you all have to write about certain shows, but how do you decide outside of that? Which I think is a really interesting question because we are all busy humans. So how do we decide what to watch outside of the stuff we're covering?
You know, this is where I say that, I mean, I don't cover everything that I watch. Like, I watched The Magicians and didn't write about it once for Vanity Fair. I think I haven't written about Riverdale all season, but I'm watching that. But for the most part, what I watch when I'm not, because a lot of what I do watch about in terms of contemporary TV is dictated by not just what I have to cover, but what other people are talking about, so that I have to know what people are talking about for my job. That being said, so last week I took a sort of staycation where I still did podcasts and stuff like that, but I didn't actually do any work, mostly didn't do any work, if anything. All I did that week was watch old movies on Turner Classic Movies, just because, like, I knew I wouldn't have to write about them. So I try to do that. I try to find something that I wouldn't ever in a million years have to write about, so that I don't have to think about it. So I can kind of, like, I can still engage with it as a film lover, you know, or a TV watcher or whatever, but I don't have to think critically while I'm watching, or constantly be thinking of angles. And so I can actually, like, sort of return to my old form of being someone who enjoys watching things with their eyeballs. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think for me it's similar. I like to call them the pressure release valve shows, where it's like, you know, you spend a lot of time digging into, like, you know, for me it's a lot of time editing and a lot of time writing about very serious movie stuff and TV and Game of Thrones and all the stuff we cover on the pod. So it's usually stuff like The Flash and iZombie and
CW shows are great for that.
Yeah, and a lot of cartoons like Archer. I watch Archer. So it's always stuff where I could just kind of sit back, kind of have it on, not have to be paying too much attention to it, but it's good fun. And the Hulu was an interesting thing. I watch Casual, which I like a lot, or Catastrophe on Amazon.
Yeah.
So I'm always just looking for mostly just comedies. And, you know, I got to get my jokes somewhere. What about you, Dave, when you're not making television or
writing about it? I used to, every week, get together with my friend Emily on Monday nights, and we would watch about 4 hours of television together and, like, talk about it, because we liked sort of the same shows, and we used to live across the street from each other, but then I moved, and then it became, like, this whole ritual, and it became a sort of ritual where we would, pay attention during upfronts and what shows would be announced, and slowly over months whittle down what show we'd, like, decide to pick up, and then there'd be a trial week where we'd watch all these pilots and then decide if it was, like, worth it to, like, follow one through. That's why how I ended up watching the entire first season of Pan Am that didn't get picked up. It was just the one that won that pilot season with me and my TV club, which is what we called it, even though there's just two of us.
Hey,
that was definitely the...
It's a TV club. Like, if it's multiple people, it's a club.
All right, that was definitely like the best way that I've ever done it, just as somebody who was genuinely enjoying the active TV landscape and not having to write about it. Now it's a lot more targeted. Like, I'm not going to click on anything that I don't know about or turn my channel to anything that I don't know about. So I definitely know what I'm getting into, and I'm curating that experience based on usually like news articles I read, or occasionally I'll read a review of a show or a season that's like midway through the season, and I'll dip in for one episode just to see if it's my thing. That's not for everybody if you're huge fans of like linear plots, and sometimes you just pick the bad episode, but that's another fun way to do it if you're just a fan of all television and are willing to, you know, play Russian roulette with it every once in a while. I definitely would try that.
So it's sort of random.
I mean, now it's not for me, but I would recommend that if you're talking about how to choose to invest time, shoot like a wide shotgun thing, get a lot of input, and then invest. I think investing without having any idea or because one or two people tell you gets you watching a whole season of Pan Am, which you might regret.
You know, and I think that's another important point. If you consume a lot of television, or if you write about television, or basically just kind of work in the pop culture sphere, is there are a lot of times where like we are obligated to watch the entire thing. But if you don't write about it, you don't have to. Like, if you're, I think we talked about this with Iron Fist. If you are like four episodes in and it's not working for you, you can just move on to something else. You're not going to have like, no one's going to penalize you for not having watched all of it. So unless you get on a podcast later and have to talk about The Leftovers and you didn't watch it since season one, then
that's right.
Screwed.
Well, we grew up in a different era where it's like, if you didn't tape The X-Files, then who knew when you were going to see that episode of The X-Files that you missed. So now I find myself like emptily digesting entire things when I definitely, you know, new people, be the digital natives that you are and be better than me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's those aren't all the questions we got, but those were the ones that made the cut. Thank you to everyone who sent in questions. There are a few questions that were sent in that I think we're probably going to end up covering next week, because next week is a themed episode and a lot of our questions were about that theme. So
what's that theme, Neil?
Oh, crazy. That's amazing. Amazing that you would ask. Next week, this was not decided as a group. I'm calling this the State of Marvel, in which we are going to talk Guardians of the Galaxy, which we will have seen by next week. That's your homework. We can also talk the MCU, and we can even drop in, since this is the last time we're going to talk Marvel for a while, we'll drop in and we'll talk about some of the Marvel TV shows and, you know, maybe a little bit more about the Netflix stuff. So
I'm not doing any extra homework for this.
Well, yeah, I feel like all the homework's done. You're done with all your homework.
All I'm saying is that I'm not watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what I'm saying.
No. Yeah, you don't have to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, yeah. That's what you should do, though, is Google the first picture of the Runaways that Hulu unveiled this week and be happy that Marvel didn't shit the bed with diversity casting, finally.
All right.
Nice. So yeah, so next week it's all Marvel all the time, in our second to last non-Game of Thrones episode of the off season. Second to last episode of the off season, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. Then we got a Rethrones.
Rethrones.
We gotta get back into that HBO Go we're all paying for and make it work for us. Yeah. All right, guys. That was good. I feel like we answered a lot of people's questions. We're going to forward some people links to our Legion episode. And everyone's
like
going to... Neil and Carolyn. And yeah, next week we'll be back to talk about a Marvel movie, which refreshingly doesn't need a lot of the MCU to stand up on its own. Just a little preview there, I thought. We'll see. Let's play some awesome music. Oh, shit. No, wait. No. We got to tell everybody who we are. Good Lord. All right.
I was already grooving out to Mr. Blue Sky in my head.
Joanna.
Yeah.
Now that you're not staycationing, where could people find more of your work?
You can find me on vanityfair.com. I will have some Guardians content up this week. You can follow me on Twitter at babygrootdances, and you can listen to me talk about American Gods on this very feed, or also over on the Gen Pop, where I got to argue with Dave Chen about the merits of American Gods for an hour.
That actually sounds really fascinating.
Yeah.
And Mr. Neil Miller.
Dave Chen hates himself some American Gods.
Dave's Unite.
You can find me over at filmschoolrejects.com, which is currently going through a migration to a new fancy site, and we will begin publishing articles again someday. Soon. We'll be putting stuff up. But you can also get podcast things at One Perfect Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects. I will tweet my reaction to Guardians of the Galaxy at the very least. And yeah.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. Find the rest of the podcast work at fightinginthewarroom.com. I'm sure to have something about Guardians of the Galaxy at some point on Film School Rejects.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Zoom posting. Yeah. And then I think I'm also doing, I'm dipping into my Lutheranism to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy's third act. For a Thrillist, I believe. But that's all coming up, and more Guardians of the Galaxy next week. Thank you guys so much for listening.